Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. I'm Amanda and I'll be your host for this and all episodes of the show. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Fave Yogis. Do you teach privately? Make payment and registration a breeze. Use the Fave Yogis app to create and manage classes for your personal clients. Life is just easier with autopay. You can forget about remembering to Venmo, or if you're up in Canada, sending an invoice, an e-transfer, or a PayPal, depending on where your clients are in the world. With Fave Yogis, you can use autopay to enable repeating payments. This will save you so much time and make things so much easier. You can also keep your calendars in sync. Google Calendar integration automatically updates teacher and student classes when you make changes. It's still just your yoga. Teachers add classes, students add teachers. Teachers and students stay connected. Head on over to the App Store and find Fave Yogis, F-A-V-Y-O-G-I-S. Use code MBOM and let them know that I sent you. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you in part by Punch Pass. And Punch Pass is a booking software that lets you effortlessly manage your customers, the passes they purchase, and the classes they attend. It's the simplest, most flexible tool you'll find on the market now, and you really get exactly what you need without the headache. They offer three payment plans, so you don't have to pay for features you don't use, and on top of that, they have top-notch customer service. So go ahead and give their free trial a go and see for yourself what Punch Pass is like. Head on over to punchpass.com/MBOM to start your free trial today. And best part is that you don't even have to enter your credit card. All right, now on to today's episode of the podcast. I'm very excited to be joined by Jordan Ashley, who is a certified yoga instructor and the founder of Sojourn Yoga, which is a nonprofit dedicated to raising awareness and funds for women's education through international yoga retreats. And on this episode of the podcast, Jordan and I talk about turning a passion for yoga into a career of social activism, how teaching yoga can impact underprivileged communities, Jordan's effort to destigmatize the yoga community, as well as the training program she's running in Rwanda, and how, as yoga teachers, we can just begin to think about how we can impact the world on a greater level with yoga. So much of the time, we kind of get in our own little bubbles of our own world and our own lives and our own yoga studios. And while all of that is so amazing and so necessary as human beings, it's also really amazing to consider, you know, how yoga can change the lives of other people. And Jordan and I talk about what it's been like to start a yoga charity, some of the things she's learned from the business side of things, and so much more. So I hope that you guys enjoy this episode of the show. And without further ado, here is Jordan. Jordan, welcome to the podcast today. I'm super excited to have you here with me.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I'm so excited to be here as well.
Yeah, we have tons to talk about, and I just love your business, and I'm excited to learn so much more about it. But I want to back up a little bit. Can you tell me about how you first got into yoga and your journey with yoga?
Absolutely. So I was first introduced to yoga through my mom. I come from an interestingly yogic family in that my great uncle brought yoga to Africa in the 1950s. And my mom was a gymnast growing up, and she ended up demoing for him when he was older, as he ended up turning his house into an ashram. So I think just from having that kind of early exposure, it created an activity for my mom and I to do together. So especially post, you know, parents' divorce, going to yoga with my mom became a way that we connected and a way that we bonded. And she would take me to kirtans or, you know, other events at the local studio in Los Angeles. And I hated physical education, especially in middle school. And she actually let me do independent study, in that she would sign off on when I would go to yoga class, which was great. So I still got the credit, but didn't have to, you know, put on the gym shorts and all of that. And yeah, my yoga process became more fleshed out a little bit later on, especially in college, in that moving, you know, across country from Los Angeles to New York, you know, the yoga studio once again became a home, especially from the other students that practiced there and the teachers that then turned into friends. So it's a lifelong journey.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. And what kind of inspired you to become a yoga teacher?
It was so impactful for me that I wanted to be able to offer that same kind of stability, in the sense that every time you come to your mat, it's a completely new experience, in that you probably feel different than you did the day before, and you definitely will feel different than the following day. So for me, being able to create a safe place, in that the yoga mat, at the same time, while, you know, you are limited to it in terms of your movement for, you know, a 60-minute class, at the same time, what is not limiting is what you're able to access. So perhaps getting a little bit more connected to your breath, or being able to, you know, soften, you know, thoughts that might be causing anxiety or upset, and just having that kind of free form expression of being able to connect, you know, mind, body, and spirit together.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, I can definitely resonate with that as well. And so how long was it after you started practicing before you actually decided to like take the leap and become a teacher?
So I ended up doing my first 200-hour teacher training the summer after I completed university. So that was in 2010. And it was a one-month intensive in New York. And I honestly waited 3 years before deciding to teach. I didn't feel like I had enough knowledge to be able to, you know, stand confidently in front of a class and be able to share the practice that had been for me to other people. And so I wanted to have a little bit more life experience under my belt, especially since I had only, you know, finished my yoga teacher training at 21.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I was a little older than that when I finished my yoga teacher training, but I also kind of felt the same way too. Like, I felt like yoga teacher training was going to give me all the information I needed about yoga, but the information it gave me really made me realize how deep the well is and how much there is to learn about yoga. And it's such a beautiful thing, because it means it's a lifelong journey of learning, but it's also like, oh man, like, who am I to teach these like practices to people when I barely know anything about the practice?
Oh, absolutely. And at the end of the day, there's so much information in the world, especially now with, you know, technology and internet literally at our fingertips. And so I think it's being able to speak from a place of authenticity that resonates with you as the individual teacher that ends up being the most powerful and empowering, not only for your students, but also, you know, for yourself as well, because it's coming from a place of truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so 2013, you're living in New York and you start teaching there through studios, or what does your journey kind of look like with your career?
So after university and after my teacher training, I had studied journalism in college. So writing is the other love of my life. I absolutely love writing. And so I ended up moving to Southeast Asia and pursued journalism. And I was predominantly doing NGO coverage, which was frustrating in that to be a good reporter, one would be neutral or essentially a bystander and making sure that you're not really picking, you know, a side. And so I would see organizations that were run really above board and others that, you know, were run very inadequately in terms of perhaps spreading themselves too thin, even if their hearts were in the right place. And so from that experience of living abroad and then coming back to New York to finish 300 hours teacher training, teach yoga, and then also, you know, freelance at the same time, I wanted to create something that could marry my love of travel, yoga, and women's empowerment. So when I moved back, I was teaching at a couple of different studios and running all around town between, you know, Manhattan and Brooklyn. And at a certain point, I want to say maybe 2.5 years in, around, you know, 2015, I decided that it was time to create something that had never been done before.
Amazing. I love that you combined all of your loves, and your loves are very similar to my loves as well, which is really, really cool to hear. But tell me about, like, you know, deciding what that next step was.
So my biggest education has been travel. And I'm sure you can absolutely relate to that that when you go to other countries, other parts of the world, especially ones in which they're either, you know, lesser economically developed, or it's just complete, you know, culture, a brand new culture or way of life, it can be extremely humbling, especially growing up in the West, and especially, you know, for me having my education handed to me. And so I saw that there was a disconnect in the yoga studios where people weren't willing to necessarily get off of their mat in terms of even being able to, you know, connect with one another. It could be someone, you know, practicing next to you. And so I figured there's a large amount of anonymity that comes into a yoga class, in that you're in a room full of however many people, and yet you're having your own individual journey. And how incredible would it be to be able to offer a similar experience of people, you know, taking their practice out of the studio and to these places, and at the same time being able to support girls' education, because for me, that's the cause that, you know, resonates most with me. And, you know, and there's a couple of statistics, such as 66 million girls are out of school globally. There are 33 million fewer girls than boys in primary school. And if all girls had a secondary education, there would be 2/3 fewer child marriages. And with statistics like that, it's hard to turn your back. It's hard to, you know, put your head, you know, back in the sand, you know, like an ostrich. And so the next step for me was being able to create something that could use the yoga practice, this idea of union, for social activism.
Mm-hmm. And is that where your business Sojourn was born?
So Sojourn Yoga, it's a play off the word sojourn, which means an abbreviated travel. We're actually a charity. So we're a 501c3 U.S. charity. And so the idea is to create, first and foremost, global retreats to places in which traditional yoga retreats aren't held. So oftentimes these are countries or destinations that are post-conflict. And then through that, through having a deeper cultural immersion with the community in which you're visiting, as well as, of course, you know, having an immersion with yourself and your part, the participants as well, you're also then volunteering and interacting with a local girls' education initiative, or, you know, female-driven project. So we include a $300 to $500 tax-deductible donation in every single participant's tuition cost that goes directly to our partner organization on the ground.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And what was that like to set that up, like kind of the business side of it? Because I feel like I wouldn't even have any idea where to start with, like, setting up a nonprofit or a charity.
I think for me, the first step was really getting a clear idea of what the format would look like, because, and also at the same time realizing that there's so many incredible, you know, on the ground charities and NGOs in so many amazing countries. So really starting small with places that I knew really well and places that I had a deep connection to, as opposed to, you know, trying to do everything at once. And also a large part of it is making sure that the yoga teachers that, you know, that we work with are in alignment with our mission and our vision, and that they all volunteer. You know, it's their sabha, it's their service to take time from their, you know, their hectic, you know, teaching schedules to be able to guide their students, their community, their friends, their family on these, you know, global expeditions and journeys. So, you know, to make sure that, and for the most part, we only have female teachers, just to make sure that, you know, everyone is in the same mood of what this is all about.
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. And so in terms of the places that you started, you had already traveled to them, or they were communities like you were familiar with, or what did that look like?
So one of the first destinations that we did was Cambodia, because I had lived there. We are partnered with called the Pondicherry Lee Foundation. And I actually lived with her during my study abroad program in Cambodia. She's incredible. She's a CNN hero. She's a survivor of the Khmer Rouge. And she currently supports over 2,800 kids in Siem Reap province by providing them education. And she just launched a girls' dorm about 2 years ago. So she's absolutely amazing. She takes us to Angkor Wat as well. And she's just, I always say she's, Pondicherry is my Khmer mom. So that was a no-brainer for me because Cambodia will always hold a piece of my heart in terms of them being an organization and a country in which completely changed the course of my existence.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Cambodia is a country that I feel like a lot of people should visit and have that experience. It was very eye-opening for me when I went. I was like 22 and I was like, oh my God, like this is how people live. Like, I think you just don't realize, like you can see things on the news or you can see photos, but you really don't realize until you're there what some people actually live in, like what their lives are like.
And the thing is as well, you know, as yoga culture has become, you know, mainstream and a lot of it has become commodified, you know, and retreats are more and more popular, especially as a way, you know, to travel with friends or partners. I think it's absolutely imperative, especially if you're going to a lesser economically developed country, to bring sanitary napkins or notebooks or pens or any clothes that you might be, you know, giving away, because it does make a difference. And it takes up so little time in terms of just being able to put in a couple of extra supplies in your suitcase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so in terms of like, you know, how it actually works when you go over there. So you find yoga teachers that are willing to volunteer their time, and then you go into the communities and they teach yoga. Is that kind of how that works?
So it really depends on how every trip is a little bit different in that we're not trying to mirror, for instance, the Peru retreat in Rwanda. They each have their own offerings. So what we do, it's a yoga retreat in that you are doing yoga at least once a day, and then also, you know, different activities sprinkled in. Maybe if you're in Peru, you'll go to the sweat lodge, or, you know, maybe if you're in Morocco, you'll go on a hike in the Hayalas Mountains. So really highlighting wherever we are, you know, what those kinds of offerings are. And then in terms of our work with the nonprofit on the ground who we're partnered with, we meet with them at least once. And it's usually over a meal and over a yoga session. So having a yoga class with the girls. And it's always fun. It's always a really incredible experience, even if, you know, someone doesn't speak the language necessarily, because all of that kind of falls by the wayside. It's always, you know, a very playful experience in that, you know, the participants who are there are running around, you know, barefoot, or we're mooing and meowing and cow and cat. So, yeah, and being completely ridiculous, or bringing out glow sticks if it's in the evening. So it's a great way to be able to connect with the young women. Also, as well, a lot of them are in very strenuous school situations because they have additional, you know, academic pressures on them to make sure that they can, you know, succeed and attend university. And so it's a great way for them to decompress as well and just have, you know, 60 minutes or so that's completely for them, and that they don't have to, you know, worry about studies or anything else.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, this is incredible that you're doing this. I'm curious, like, from running this for a couple of years now, have you seen like the impact of the yoga in the communities? Like, is the yoga, I guess, I feel like working is the word that's coming to mind, but I feel like that's not like the right word. Like, I guess, like, what sort of impact are you seeing from teaching these girls yoga?
Absolutely. So what's happened, which I think is fantastic, is that the girls are now doing yoga on their own. And so something that I'm very dedicated to developing, because I realize it's not enough to just, you know, drop in at least, you know, one time a year and do a yoga session. It's being able to give these young women, you know, the skill set of being able to guide themselves and also, you know, their friends and their peers through yoga as well. So Pondicherry actually now, you know, will teach yoga at the schools, which I think is fantastic. And she'll, you know, lay out a big blue tarp, and, you know, all the kids will go on it as well. And also in Nicaragua, the girls do yoga. So it's becoming another extracurricular activity for something for them to engage in as well. But what's so cool is that, you know, oftentimes we'll get participants who are really enthusiastic about the retreat. So my dear friend Erica Lubetsky came to Morocco, and she's a textile designer. And so for her thesis, she was doing a project about natural dyes, and she had the girls in Morocco collect onion skins. And so when she showed up, you know, with everyone else, and it's called EFA, so Education for All, and they're located in the High Atlas Mountains in Morocco. She did a whole natural dye workshop, and she had done a whole fundraising campaign, and so that she brought tote bags with them so the girls would have, you know, new book bags for school. And while the bags were soaking in the onion skin dye, that was when they did the yoga session.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So we like to also use art as well as another way for people to connect.
Yeah. So it's kind of like integrating yoga with the culture, and then kind of looking at like what else is kind of could be impactful or could be helpful to either learn about or to take part in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, the yoga is never about healing or saving, which I think this very easily could turn into. I always say that these experiences, especially when we're engaging with these nonprofits on the ground or with the girls, it's one of equality, not hierarchy. And so it's important to remember that even via, you know, the medium of social media and how you are documenting your time with these incredible people.
Right. So it's not about like fixing them or I guess changing who they are, trying to make their experience better. It's just about offering the yoga to them.
Exactly.
And so are the teachers that come to teach, do they have to be like trauma informed, like trained in trauma and that sort of thing, or?
No. So my opinion of that is when you're in a yoga class, be it New York, LA, London, et cetera, and you're teaching a class, you don't know anyone's experiences, who you're guiding or who you're teaching. And so I think the same could be said for when we're engaging and teaching with these girls, in that you don't know what their experiences are. And so I think it's best to just leave it as a more playful and fun experience, as opposed to wanting to delve into, you know, places of it being therapeutic or working with, you know, trauma.
Right. So it's not coming from the place of like, this is like, it's not trauma informed yoga. Like, you're not trying to heal them from their traumas. It's trying to bring an aspect that's going to bring joy into their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, as well, it would be very hard to, you know, to get background information on, you know, every single girl in terms of, you know, what their histories are. And I personally think it's kind of not really any of our business. If people want to share, you know, their stories, of course, we're always open to it. But this is more of a way to support their education through the hosting these global yoga retreats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I completely agree as well. Like, I think there's a complete difference between somebody who, like, maybe is in a treatment center or in a facility where they're seeking support, and then there's yoga that can provide that support in that capacity, versus like assuming that you can just go into a community that you know nothing about and, I don't know, quote unquote, save the people. I'm on the same page as you. Like, I don't think that people around the world need us to come and save them. I think there just needs to be more understanding about how our cultures are different.
Yeah, no, absolutely. 100%. And, you know, what ends up also happening too on the other side of it is, you know, participants come, and for the most part, women are drawn to these kinds of trips and these kinds of excursions. And so they end up opening about, you know, their own, you know, gambit of experiences, which just, you know, for me, once again, brings it full circle in that these are experiences of creating a deeper human connection.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's amazing. And so as you've grown, like, what's it been like finding new communities to go into? Like, if you're looking to offer a new retreat somewhere else, how do you kind of go about actually finding that place and finding a contact in the community and getting organized with the retreats?
So it's usually through personal connection, either from me or someone on the advisory board, or even from, you know, one of the teachers, you know, that we work with. And that's always really exciting in terms of being able to start the conversation of what would our engagement and interaction look like with them, what time of year works best, what are places nearby that could offer that spirit of a retreat in terms of great food, great activities to do, you know, amazing sights, and also as well being able to make sure that we're able to support in the best way that we can whatever partner organization is. So I'm super excited. We are doing two new retreats next year. One is to Cape Town, and that's with Lalela. It's an amazing organization, and they bring art to townships.
Oh, cool.
Especially, yeah, to work with their student population. So we'll be volunteering for, we have three sessions with them, which I'm really grateful for, and it will be with their female empowerment students. So doing yoga and art side by side. And then also we are going to be doing a retreat in Sri Lanka with the Rosie May home, which is a social orphanage in that the girls do have parents, but for whatever reason, they're unable to stay at home. So this provides them a safe place and nourishment and also education as well. So we'll be partnering with them.
Amazing. Those both sound incredible. If people want to learn more about those, they can find them on your website?
Yes. It's souljournyoga.com.
Okay, cool. I'll make sure there's a link for that in the show notes.
Hey, yogis. I just wanted to take a quick little break to talk about studio growth. Has your yoga studio's growth become stagnant? If you're like many studio owners I talk to, you've tried every marketing tactic under the sun. You started a blog, you're posting regularly on all the social media sites, running challenges, sending out newsletters, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, you're doing a ton of work and barely paying the bills. What if there was an easier way? A way to get new students regularly coming through the door without having to do so much work to get them there. A proven system that will consistently bring in 20 plus new paying students to your studio each and every month. Well, there is. Ron Medlin and his team at GetYogaStudents.com had developed a three-step system that will help you quickly grow your yoga studio to a six-figure profits and beyond without being shackled to your business. So if you're ready to grow fast and you'd like the blueprint to help you get started, visit GetYogaStudents.com today to get the exact system Ron and his team uses to help his yoga studio clients add 10, 20, or even 30 new students every single month. On top of that, you get a free 45-minute consultation session. So if you're kind of like, I'm not really too sure about all this, I don't want to fork out a bunch of money without even knowing if this is going to work, head on over to GetYogaStudents.com. Book a free consultation and just talk with Ron. He's got so much knowledge, and him and his team are willing to work with you with your studio's needs. And once again, it's getmoreyogastudents.com to start getting more students in your yoga studio today. This episode is also brought to you in part by Punch Pass. You heard me talk about Punch Pass at the beginning of this episode, and I am so excited to be partnered with them. Before we continue with the episode, I wanted to tell you a couple more things about the software. So with Punch Pass, they have really done their best to make sure that you can focus on the business that you enjoy and let them take the hassle off your hands. And they've done so in a way that we can afford as businesses. One of the things that I love the most about Punch Pass is that they're a small business, just like you and just like me. And so they're made for us. They're not a big company that's just charging us a lot of money for the services. They understand that we're small businesses as yoga teachers, and they really want us to be able to do what we love, which is teach yoga. So if you've been looking for some sort of software that can make your yoga business a lot more simple, head on over to punchpass.com/MBOM to start your free trial today. All right, back to the episode.
And then you mentioned before we started recording that you're off for a teacher training journey tomorrow in Rwanda, you said, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about what this teacher training is all about and what you're going to be doing over there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the retreats was a great first step or first tier in regards to building Souljourn Yoga as a brand and also growing our experiences and our partner organizations. And for the most part, we have the same destinations and the same organizations that we're partnered with every single year. But going once a year for me personally, you know, wasn't enough. And so something that I've seen just from traveling is that there's an abundance of Western yoga teachers who are teaching at resorts or hotels or retreat centers in lesser economically developed countries. And I don't understand why the local women who live there and who are, you know, fluent in the language and who live there, why no one has come in to do a teacher training for them, to be able to offer them skill set, new source of income, stability, perhaps even passion or career choice as well. So I developed with one of my colleagues, it's called On the Ground. So it's a 50-hour yoga immersion. And so we are working and with 9 women from Camara. So Camara is our partner organization in Rwanda. So these women are facilitators or staff members. And some of them even work with their teen mom population and will be doing yoga classes with them. And so the idea was to distill what would be done in a 200-hour training and put it in a 50-hour one, and making it really accessible and culturally secular so that it could be done anywhere in the world. So this is the first time that we're doing it. So I'm really nervous and excited. And I know it's going to be a really, really, really impactful experience, not only for the people who are coming, but also for myself, since it's the first time that we've done this.
Yeah, absolutely. I really love that kind of model of giving back. Like, I think that, you know, there's something to say for like going over somewhere and offering your services, or maybe teaching somebody something, or bringing, you know, notebooks or bags or whatever it is for an underprivileged community. But I think that if you can like teach somebody a skill that can help them build a career or make an income, like that's incredible. That's such an incredible way to be able to give back to somebody who maybe previously didn't feel like they had any skill sets to make money, or maybe just felt like they weren't good enough to do something like that, to empower them for that, I think is really amazing.
Even if it's just for themselves or learning another way to practice self-care, which very much is a form of luxuries. It's the assumption that someone's safety and sustenance and shelter are taken care of for them then to be able to focus on themselves on a very intangible level, I think is also hopefully will resonate with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think because, you know, for the most part in, you know, Canada, the US, a lot of people have like from Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like they have those physical needs met. And I know that there's like a lot of people who don't have those needs met, even in Canada and the US and other Western countries. But for the most part, it's like, you know, we're able to kind of go beyond that and look at like, you know, how privileged am I to be able to like drink my lemon water and meditate and read a book in the morning type thing. Like, it's not something that everyone is able to think of. So I think being able to give that self-care element and teach that self-care element, I'm sure, is amazing. And I know you're not like going in there for the healing purposes, but I do feel like that stuff is kind of innately very healing for people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, people can take from the experience what they wish. And I think like any teacher training, it brings up different things for people and oftentimes brings to light perhaps instances or thoughts or feelings that may have, you know, been brushed aside for a long time as well. So I hope that it's an illuminating experience. And at the bare minimum that, you know, the women feel like they can express this idea of yoga or union, you know, not only for their community, but for themselves as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. How do you guys kind of do the, like, for this teacher training, for example, like, is it entirely by donations? Do people pay to do it? Or how do you do it on that side?
So for the On the Ground one, we received a grant to be able to do it because I felt like it's such beta. In that, you know, I'm sure I'm going to come back with my notebook all marked up in terms of ways that we can do it better before then wanting to get charities involved to then, you know, basically, you know, hire soldiering out to do it. So I'm very fortunate that Chimera is letting myself and soldiering come in and essentially run this teacher training with their, you know, incredible staff and facilitators as a first go around.
Okay, cool. So you guys are kind of beta testing this with the grant. And then going forwards, I'm assuming that you'll continue doing this and it's going to be amazing and that sort of thing. Is it the type of thing where like people can come, like the organizations that you work for, those women get to come to the teacher trainings for like free or a lower cost? Or I guess I'm just curious, like from the business side of things, how it all works.
So ideally, I don't want the women to have to pay for it. I think that it could end up being, you know, expensive. I want it to be as cost efficient. I would love to be able to keep this afloat just by running off of grants and being able to expand to different countries and different destinations and be able to seek out, you know, financial support through, you know, through different mediums and whatnot. Another possibility is to potentially have other charities. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a charity that we work for abroad. It could potentially be one that's local. So maybe they want, you know, their staff, if it's, you know, a tech business or a fashion business, and be able to offer that to their team as well.
Okay, cool. Gotcha. That definitely makes sense. I'm curious for yourself personally, like, how do you balance the social activism piece with, like, I guess, your own, like, paying yourself? I think this is something that is a struggle with many people in the yoga space in general. It's like, okay, I love yoga. You know, how do you put a price on what you offer? And then it's like, you know, making it accessible to people and then being able to support yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And then kind of adding this like nonprofit aspect of it and the social activism aspect of it. I'm curious, like, how you personally balance that.
Well, I think at the beginning, I had a lot of guilt, and especially, you know, as founder and as executive director of Souljourn, in terms of always feeling a little bit, you know, guilty if I have, you know, because obviously I have to, you know, feed and continue to grow this. I have to, you know, pull salary. It's a very modest one, but at the same time, I've kind of had to grapple and get over it, and that this isn't going to run itself unless I'm able to be supported as well through this. And so I could definitely see how, you know, there's a lot of thoughts about, you know, a nonprofit and all the money needs to go out. But if anything, not even for Souljourn, but for a lot of nonprofits, you know, people who decide to take that career path, it's oftentimes a very selfless one. And so I think those people need even more support. And I think it's an underpaid industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all of that. And I think, you know, I'm definitely on team, like, you need to get paid. Obviously, I think that if you're not making the money that you need to take care of yourself, like, this isn't going to continue working. So it's like, you know, money's the currency that we use in 2019 in order to be able to exchange goods and services. And so obviously there has to be money coming in for money to go out. But yeah, I know for in 2018, like early 2018, I did a lot of work on like my personal relationship with money and like my money story and stuff. And I always thought that like, oh, I don't really have that many issues with money, but it was crazy. All of the stuff that came up just around like money. It's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, no one likes to talk about it. It's considered, you know, very taboo. A teacher once said to me, in terms of oftentimes, you know, I think even new teachers feel guilty in that they're like, oh, I don't know enough. I shouldn't, you know, be having, you know, students pay me for a class, and I should, you know, purely be, you know, volunteering at this point. But a teacher once said to me that it's an energy exchange and that you're offering something and money is just another form of energy. And, you know, it's a form of self-care in that, you know, it is currency. It's what keeps us fed and clothed and, you know, able to have, you know, quality of life as well. So I think it's just another form of empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love thinking about it as a form of empowerment. I feel like it is tough though, when you're like, wanting to give back. Like, it sounds like you're very, very passionate about helping women around the world, especially in underprivileged communities. And I'm sure that there is like a lot of maybe like feelings or feelings of guilt associated with that. Did you have any practices that kind of helped with like moving past the guilt and the feelings of guilt?
I think just from doing this over time, I remember the first couple of instances, even prior to Soldier and, you know, launching and whatnot, the first couple of times I went abroad, I would come back to New York and I would be in the biggest depression for at least a week because I had a tremendous amount of guilt in that, you know, I could come home and I was in my apartment and, you know, my dog and a fridge, you know, full of all my favorite foods. And, you know, so much of that we take for granted. And I think it's through this feeling in that I didn't have control over the situation that I was born into, nor did, you know, someone else, nor did you, nor did, you know, any of your listeners, in that if one is able to give back, it could even be, you know, if you're leaving a restaurant and you have extra food and, you know, giving it to a homeless person, it doesn't have to be, you know, whole life dedicated to philanthropy. I think every little bit helps. So I guess it's just been over time and acknowledging that in order for my mission to spread and in order for it to continue to amplify and grow and expand to different places, that, you know, I have to take care of myself as well. And so often in the past I had, you know, would run myself ragged and staying up all night doing emails from, you know, all the different time zones and feeling like there are not enough hours in the day. And for a large amount of time, and even, you know, on some days I still feel like that. But then I have to take a step back and realize that I am of no service to anyone if I'm completely depleted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such an important lesson as just a human being in general, but especially like as an entrepreneur, as a yoga teacher. It's like, if your bucket's totally empty, like how are you supposed to give to somebody else?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm at my best when I feel balanced and calm and stable. And so being able to find that, you know, granted the spectrum of that is large on, you know, any given week, but being able to tap into at least aspects of that makes the work all the more, impactful or all the more inspired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And so I'm curious, was it your work with Soldiern that took you to London over this last year, or why did you decide to move there?
So I was in New York for 12 years and I wanted to expand Soldiern to the UK because, especially for a lot of the destinations that we work with, I think it's a lot more accessible if you are in Europe. And I've grown a really beautiful friend group here and fantastic business contacts and colleagues as well. And so it seemed like a good change of pace to leave New York for the time being. It's not goodbye forever. It's just goodbye for now, and be able to set up roots in London.
Nice. That's amazing. I was saying before we started recording, that's always been a dream of mine. And you were like, just do it. It's amazing. I feel like it's just like, seems like such a great city to live in.
It's lovely. Everyone's really warm and welcoming. And there's a great, you know, yoga community here as well. And people are very savvy in terms of having a bigger global perspective than I've found in other cities as well. And that people do care about, you know, what's happening, you know, outside of their city or outside of their periphery or even, you know, their neighborhood. And so far it's been absolutely incredible.
Yeah. That's amazing to hear. I'm curious, like, how has the yoga industry or what is like the yoga community like in London compared to what it was like in New York?
I'm still discovering it. I haven't been here for that long. There's absolutely amazing teachers, though, who are extremely warm and extremely welcoming. So that's always so positive to engage with and to want to work with. I think for New York, because I was there for so long, I ended up knowing, you know, quite a few people, which was great, that there is something really refreshing about, you know, stepping into someone's class and having no expectations or no, you know, expectations or any kind of preconceived notions of, you know, what the next, you know, hour would entail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is something pretty amazing about that. I always love to go to different yoga classes wherever I am in the world. And I think it's just, I mean, it's really amazing to see this practice that's like same, same, but different all over the place. Like it's something that can unite people all over the world with different cultures and in different cities and through different languages. And there's always like elements of it that are the exact same as at my home studio, which I always really love.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. It's so nice when you have a home studio and it's just, you know, it's like coming home. There it is.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And so I'm curious, you know, for you, like what are sort of your longer term goals or like what's your vision for your business and even for like the yoga community as a whole in terms of bringing more social activism into what we're doing as yoga teachers?
I think everyone has causes that, you know, that resonate with them. So for me, it's girls' education. For someone else, it might be, you know, animal rights and advocacy or the environment. And I think anytime you're able to fuse in your passions with your other passions, such as teaching or such as, you know, guiding someone through, you know, a yoga sequence, and then also, you know, bringing another component into, I always feel like that ends up having the deepest impact. A long-term goal for myself and for Souljourn is to launch satellite studios in the different countries that we work within. It's a similar model in that if you wanted to come and do your 200-hour teacher training in Cambodia, then by you signing up, it would then cover the tuition of a local woman to attend as well. And so this way, when you leave and you go back to your hometown, you've left that individual with a whole new, you know, skill set and career path. And, you know, as we said earlier, a whole new source of income as well. And the whole studio would be run by the people that live there.
That's amazing. I love that.
Thank you.
Cool. That's
3 to 5 years.
Did you say 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, if not sooner. But yeah, that's the realistic goal. But is that would be the next step.
Amazing. I love that. That's really cool. And so there's the teacher training that's happening, you know, tomorrow. And then after that, do you guys have more teacher trainings on the horizon? Or is it kind of like beta test this one, see how it goes, then come back with something better from there?
So we're beta testing this one. It will definitely will go through some edits, but we're also in talks with our different partners about hosting the teacher trainings for the girls prior to the retreats happening. So potentially running it in Morocco, which I think could be really fantastic, and also Sri Lanka as well. And I'm waiting to have, you know, the kind of the final version before it really goes public with the on the ground yoga immersion.
Amazing. I love that. And I really connected with something you said just a few minutes ago when we were talking about like social activism and giving back and that sort of thing. I saw this meme that I reshared on my Instagram stories that was like, it was basically just like thank you to the person who, you know, is passionate about women empowerment, but, you know, drives a car type thing. Thank you to the person who like walks everywhere, but, you know, wears like a Gore-Tex jacket or whatever. It was basically saying like, you know, none of us are perfect in what we're doing when it comes to like the entire world. But it's like, as long as you're trying, we should be grateful to the people who are doing things. And I think that that's something that really resonates with me. I feel like when it comes to making, you know, waves in the world, it's like, it's knowing that maybe we can't be perfect with everything that's happening and we can't solve all the problems, but we can be grateful for the people who are passionate about, you know, things like you're passionate about and things that I'm passionate about. And we can kind of come together and work together to make the world a better place instead of hating on each other for not necessarily having the same passions. If that makes sense. I don't know if I explained that very well.
No, you did. I saw that as well. And I think it's so profound and it's so accurate because we're all doing our best. We all are born under, you know, different circumstances and have our own trials and tribulations. And I think it's better and more, it's just, I don't know, it's more positive to applaud people for when they do try than to shame someone for something that they, you know, might not be doing. You know, we can only do so much. And I think realizing what our own personal limitations are and really strengthening the things that we are able to put, you know, 100% of our focus and energy and passion behind is what will end up having, you know, a greater, you know, global imprint. And I'm very much a middle path, you know, person in that I don't believe in extremes in one way or the other. I think, you know, life is about enjoyment and it's about pleasure and celebrating with friends or with family or, you know, having these, you know, incredible experiences. But in the same breath of that is if you were born, you know, in a situation and that you do have, you know, access to education and perhaps, you know, some extra funding, I think it is important to then become a champion for rights or for people or animals or for those who aren't able to express themselves in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. And I love that. I think that that's a great way of putting it into perspective. And I also agree with like having some sort of balance is really important, because I think that, you know, there's enough stuff happening in the world right now that we could go crazy trying to solve all the problems. And then, you know, if I'm spending all my time stressed about the things I'm not doing, I'm probably not being very productive with the things I could be doing. So, you know, I love the fact that there's like people like yourself who are dedicating hours and hours of their lives and their businesses to, you know, helping a specific group of people in the world. And I think it's a very beautiful thing. So thank you for that.
Thank you. You know, and for me, I truly believe that education is the key to changing the playing field. And it's the only way that we're going to be able to create, you know, global equality is if we get 50% of the population, you know, elevated and empowered as well. So that's, you know, that's my fight, you know, but it might not be someone else's, and that's totally fine as well.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, this conversation has been incredible. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, especially when you're on a big adventure starting tomorrow. I hope that that goes amazing. I'm excited to follow along with it. And I will make sure that there are links and all that good stuff to your website in the show notes. If people want to connect with you outside of your website, are you on social media, all that good stuff?
I am. It's the same at Soljourn Yoga handle and the email's info@souljournyoga.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Amanda. It's been such a dream speaking to you. And I absolutely love what you're doing and what your podcast is promoting and bringing on, you know, different yoga teachers or, you know, different people who are impacted by yoga and having them, you know, share their stories. So thank you.
All right, guys, I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Jordan from Soljourn Yoga. And if you are interested in learning more about Soljourn, head on over to souljournyoga.com. They've got all of the retreats for 2020 listed up on the website. So just to go through them quickly in case you are interested, they've got one in Cape Town, South Africa in January, Siem Reap in February, Sri Lanka in April, and Peru in May. And then there's also Tibet, Rwanda, and Morocco coming soon with more details. So if any of those sound up your alley, I would definitely go check this out. If social activism and yoga is something you're passionate about, make sure you reach out to Jordan. She's doing some incredible things in the yoga space. As always, you can find show notes on the website at mbomyoga.com. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And you can join the private Facebook community at Yoga Business Badasses. All right, that's all for me now, and I will see you next week. Thanks for listening. Namaste.